We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good. For some reason, that one, this is like our 1,000th time that we've started a podcast with you doing that, and I jumped that time.
You know why? Because I'm so fired up. It's tourney time. It's spring. Like, I see actual like leaf buds on the trees, and I was telling our guest, I was like, because I grew up in the Midwest, and because I went to college in the Northeast, like in New England, and then spent a lot of time in New York, like March is always a lie, right? March is like, okay. Like, it's like, oh, it's nice one day, and it's like, oh, maybe it'll stay this way. And then the next day, it's like, fuck no. Like, dude, like, you're getting a fucking blizzard. I live in a bit more temperate area. And so when March comes here and like spring comes in March in Maryland, like, you get actual spring, like you get cherry blossoms and stuff. And I'm wandering around all the flowers yesterday, and I'm like, is it gonna stay this way? I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I just get hit with fucking sleet for no reason at all. Yeah. But that has not happened yet, so I'm very
excited. I've been fooled for the 40 odd straight year by that, but you know, it's different now. As you said, it is March.
Yep,
we're in one shining moment together.
Yep. And nice. To that end. Before we bring in our guests, I do want to note that when the weather's nice, I think we can spare each other the global warming jokes from now on. Like, I think that's been done, where it's like, it's nice out. And then people are like, yeah, thanks to big oil. And I'm like, yeah, I know the deal. Like, I know we're all going to die. Well, just chill out. Let me enjoy the 70 degree day. All right.
I'm fine with that. I'm just never going to stop thanking big oil for all the stuff that they've brought to our lives.
I agree.
It's what's for dinner.
And you know who else would like to thank? Our guest, Ken Pomeroy.
Whoa, because you put him in a tough spot.
He is here. he is here. He's part of Big Computer, and he's going to join us for a Hater's Guide to the NCAA Tournament. Hater's Guide. Hi, Ken.
Wow.
Hey, guys. Did you hear it was the warmest winter ever this past year?
Yeah.
I love it.
You know who we want to thank for that?
Yeah.
Our sponsors.
That's right. I actually, I was listening to another podcast, Ken Roth, and I was binge watching it or binge listening to it because I was driving up to see my dad. I have to take care of my dad, and it was a Vikings podcast, but every opening of it was two women for a deodorant talking about how it's okay to put it on your cooch now. And I was like, I don't think. And they were like, yeah, I put it down there and I get 7 to 2 hours of freshness. And I was like, this is not the right target audience for this product. But apparently,
I just wanted big to know deodorant. Why KJ Osborne left. Ugh.
Apparently, big deodorant's very big now on expanding your use of the deodorant stick into other places on your body. But I'll tell you what doesn't stink. This field, Ken Pomeroy.
Oh, wow. All right. So I was wondering, you don't have to respond to that, Ken.
we're getting excited about basketball now. So Ken's all right now. Ken, we've looked at the bracket. We've looked at your final Ken Pom rankings, which are always much more reliable than whatever the committee does while they're sitting in the back smoking their cigars. And we have some questions for you. Are you ready for our questions?
I am. That was a hell of an opening, and I'm still trying to compose myself, but yes, please go ahead.
I understand. Yeah, a lot of people tremble, you know, they get very intimidated when I talk about putting deodorant on your gooch, but you know, it's okay. The top seeds this year in the tournament, they're defending champ UConn, Houston, Purdue, and North Carolina. Now, three of those four are the top three in your rankings, UConn, Houston, and Purdue, but one of them, North Carolina, is ninth. Ken Pomeroy, do you consider North Carolina to be significantly worse than the other one seeds?
I do. Yeah, the other three have really separated themselves, certainly by both their you know, resume, looking at their quality wins and things like that, and just their overall level of play from game to game. Carolina, on the other hand, has been quite solid, and I actually think, Carolina's not begging for publicity or credit or anything like that. They have plenty of fans, but, you know, Hubert Davis has actually done a pretty good job coaching them up this year after a disaster a year last year where they were preseason number one and didn't make the tournament.
Right,
but,
yes.
Yes, but yes, they are the weakest of the four number ones. And in fact, they're, you know, not even the strongest team in their bracket. That would be the second seed, Arizona. So Carolina oddly finding itself as somewhat of an underdog as a one seed in the West region.
No one respects Carolina. What? Yeah, exactly. Can you get into the nitty gritty of why they are not on the level of UConn? Like, where are their weaknesses?
The main weakness is, I would say, on the offensive end. Yeah, if you, you know, compare videos of UConn and North Carolina's offense, just running a random clip from a game, you will be enamored with what UConn does, and you will be not necessarily repulsed with the way North Carolina plays, but they do play through a traditional post in Armando Bacot, who is also quite old for the college game.
Yeah.
So it's not,
like,
you know,
who's it? Is it like Drew Gooden? Or there's a couple of like Kansas guys that I feel like were in school.
Perry Ellis. Solid
six or seven. Perry Ellis is the one because he sort of looked older.
These are guys who are like Bo Nix years old. Like they've been to like 15 schools and stuff like that. Okay. All right.
Armando Bacot has only been to one school to his credit. But yes, he's been there a long time.
Would you say UNC's offense is almost Big Ten-ish aesthetically? Like, should I actively avoid watching them play?
Yeah, I mean, there is a comparison there to like a extremely poor man Zach Edey for Armando Bacot. You know, very traditional back to the basket guy, just not as tall or dominant as Edey. A solid college player, really good college player. That's the reason he's been at Carolina for as long as he has been. But no question, not like your smooth flowing, you know, pro style offense here.
Oh, okay. UConn is the number one seed in the entire field. Do you consider them to be significantly better than every other team, Houston and Purdue included?
I think that's fair to say. Yeah, I mean, certainly the way they closed the season, you know, there are shades of the way they closed last season. Just for the most part, dominant wins. You know, they were challenged a bit by St. John's in the Big East tournament. They were challenged a bit by a depleted Marquette team in the Big East tournament.
Well, they got housed by Marquette in the regular season too.
They did. I mean, they're not perfect, but they did close the season strong. The real issue with them is that they also got placed in a region where it's almost like the selection committee is doing everything they can to prevent UConn from repeating as champions. They got placed in easily the toughest bracket. And so the fact that they're better than every other team doesn't necessarily mean they're an obvious favorite, is because their road is so much tougher.
Listening to Ken right now, Roth, I'm getting the sense that there's going to be a steal from UConn, that if things have been conspiring, that they have been conspiring to steal the vote away from UConn to win the tournament.
You feel like the committee was very nasty and unfair to UConn?
Yes. I think we might have to stop this steal, perhaps by, like, I don't know, cutting ISU's brakes or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I am not saying that's what should be done, but I'm just...
But something has to be done. You have to do it. It is true that is an extremely good, by Ken's rankings, the four seed in Connecticut's division is not just better than UNC, but one of the five best teams in college basketball. That's Auburn.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, but go ahead.
I'm just like sort of fascinated by how a team that is not just the consensus number one, but like by a pretty wide margin, the consensus number one could accidentally wind up in a bracket that hard. I don't believe that anybody is conspiring against Danny Hurley. I feel like reasons to be mad about Danny Hurley's general thing, but I don't think that any of the aforementioned cigar smoking backroom dudes are like. I've had a harder time parsing this bracket than usual, not because I think that I don't know what the good teams are. I think that I do. I just don't find a lot of teams either like underseeded or interesting. Maybe it's just that I haven't watched
any.
No, maybe it's just that I, for all of the much awful college basketball that I've watched this year, that I haven't watched the right awful college basketball. But what are like, I don't need you to tell me who's going to win anything, Ken, because we both know that none of us, as much as you know, none of us know. Who's fun? I watched Auburn in the SEC tournament. They seem fun. Bruce Pearl is bad vibes to me, but that team is a blast. Who's like actually going to be a good watch? Like if we were already starting out with the assumption that our respective brackets are in the toilet.
Sure. That's a great assumption to start with. That's a great relief to me, actually. Yeah, almost the entire SEC is fun to watch. There's, you know, been rumblings about the SEC possibly breaking off from the NCAA. And honestly, from an NCAA tournament standpoint, this would be a great year for them to do it. They have all their top teams either, you know, aren't committed to the defensive end, let's say, or play at a fast pace. and some of them do both. And so, I mean, the actual SEC tournament was already played, so I guess we don't really need to replay it. But, you know, a lot of scores, you know, 92 to 87 or 102 to 89 or something like that.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, just it's really an NBA All-Star vibe. Maybe not like 2024 NBA All-Star vibe, but like, you know, 1996 NBA yeah. All-Star vibe where...
Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, you're out there doing cool things and making really athletic plays. And, you know, the defense kind of lets them do that for three quarters of the game. And then at the end, you know, the defense really tries to lock in and there's some actual competition. So I throw them out there. And if we want to go outside the SEC, I'd add Arizona because they are kind of similarly an up-tempo team. They do play some defense and they do have Caleb Love, who is really one of the most fun players to watch. Maybe a little more maddening if you're coaching him. His shot selection is sometimes questionable at best, but if you have no dog in the fight, he's a real fun player to watch.
Yeah, he's got the thing that you want to see in a college basketball player. And again, apologies to my University of Arizona fan friends who are much more on the infuriated side of him than I have been. I love a college basketball guy that plays as if he is just like mid-career Michael Jordan. I like that mentality in a guy, especially a dude, you know, whatever, like sort of a transfer portal guy is just up there to get up shots. One of the great treats of this year, part of the year, is for me, I mean, I spend some time looking at the rankings on kenpom.com, your website, as you know, during the year. The SEC ones, though, by the time you get to the end of the year, you've got your adjusted rankings for offense and defense. It doesn't necessarily, again, inform successful bracket picking. Like, we can assume that most people that are listening to this are not doing it for advice, but the spread between the offensive and defensive rankings for some of the SEC teams was enough that it was like a solid at home LOL just as a reader to see two numbers that far apart from each other. I believe Kentucky is fifth in adjusted offense and 102nd or 104th in adjusted defense. I don't have that tab open.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yes. So who are the, are there any, obviously, it's really hard to get two numbers that far from each other and still make the tournament field. Who are the real like divergent goofball teams in that regard?
Right. Yeah, you were close. 108 for Kentucky on defense.
Nice. And solid. Sorry, I overrated their defense.
Yes. And Kentucky is kind of a trendy pick, which, as you said, I'm not giving advice here. I'm glad you clarified that. But you might want to stay away from Kentucky. They're going to really have to do something in the tournament that they haven't done all season defensively. But yeah, there are a number of contenders like that. Alabama is second on offense, 112 on defense. Florida, 14th on offense, 83rd on defense. And their starting center broke his leg in the SEC tournament, so that may impact their defense a little bit more. Illinois is third and 93, so there are a number of teams who just went all in on the offensive side and kind of ignored the defense. And, you know, I love watching that. And I would rather, see teams do that than go in the other direction. But really loading up on offense and ignoring defense is not necessarily a recipe for deep success in this event.
Like the idea of a coach bringing in that image of a horse where like the first half of it is drawn really realistically by an adult and the back half of it is drawn really poorly by a child and being like, guys, this year we need to be the horse.
We're coming off of, I think, probably the weirdest Final Four of my lifetime. It was last year it was UConn, it was San Diego State, Kansas State, and Florida Atlantic. And by the way, San Diego State and Florida Atlantic are the same bracket with UConn this year. But anyway, my point being that can I expect a similarly odd, anomalous Final Four, not just this year, but next year? Are we ever going to, you know, can I look forward to, you know, fewer blue bloods always making this thing chalk by the end of it?
Yeah, so a couple of points here. First of all, let's talk about like the early rounds, because we had so many crazy things happening in conference tournaments that the bottom of the bracket is about as soft as it's ever been. You know, a lot of non-regular season champs won their conference tournaments, and so I would be a bit surprised to see many upsets, many big upsets anyway, in the first round. Ooh. Obviously, it can still happen. I mean, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson wasn't very good last year, and they beat
what?
Purdue. And
what?
So, yeah, you'll see. you'll still see one or two of those upsets, I'm sure. But it seems like well, it'll be a little more chalky early. Late, I think it's a little more of a wild card. I mean, certainly, you know, we've talked about the top three. You know, UConn, Houston, and Purdue really have kind of separated themselves over the course of the season. So we, you know, in that sense, you might be tempted to think there's going to be a chalky Final Four, but they haven't separated themselves so much that we're not going to see some upsets. So I see a repeat of last year. I would be really surprised, but I also, you know, would also be surprised if three number one seeds got to the Final Four. I mean, that era is, I don't want to say over, but, you know, given just the transfer portal and how talent just moves around and is kind of distributed a lot more equally than it used to be, I would be really surprised to see a chalk Final Four.
It's so funny to compare that with college football, which is consolidating so quickly and so ruthlessly, where there's only going to be two conferences left, you know, within like, I don't know, 2-3 years. Like all the other ones are going to fall by the wayside. And they will. They'll break off from the NCAA. And then you have the tournament, which remains as oddly democratic as it's ever been, which I, you know, it's kind of fun. To that end, Purdue, let's go back to them for a moment. Are they going to choke in the first round or the second? It's important.
They were, you know, I mean, they were given a pretty friendly path, you know, to the Final Four. I mean, their second round game potentially is Utah State or TCU, which isn't terribly difficult. I'm not saying it won't be close, but not, you know, not terribly difficult. And then after that, it's, you know, a Kansas team who is pretty beat up right now, or a Gonzaga team who's really down. So there is, I mean, there's always the specter of Matt Painter's tournament history, which it wasn't right. Just last year. I mean, it's like year after year, it seems like there's disappointment from his teams. And so, you know, I would really struggle to you know, envision them going any deeper than the Final Four. I mean, somebody's got to get there, and the second seed in their region is Tennessee, and Rick Barnes similarly has a history of, you know, uninspiring part of the tournament. Yeah. So, I mean, who are you going
to
go with there?
I enjoy that Rick Barnes is still around for me to kick, so I can just be like, oh, Rick Barnes, that team ain't doing shit. And that's been the case for decades.
It's the same thing with Matt Painter, though, that they've like completely refined the process of being Rick Barnes. Like, he's like better at being Rick Barnes now than when he was coaching fucking Kevin Durant. It's just like, that's kind of a frustrating thing to be. That's your issue.
I like Ken, that you said that the committee is basically made so they're like, listen, Purdue, we're gonna give you this is your best shot. If you can't get to the Final Four this time around after the way we arranged it, we're just not gonna invite you at all. We're gonna make you play in the fucking NIT next year, even if you go undefeated. Fuck you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is their best shot. You know, this is Zach Edey's last year. If they can't do it this year, I'm not sure they're going to have a better situation.
So you had SEC champion Auburn as your fourth best team in the KenPom rankings. They're only a 4 seed. And another 4 seed, Duke, is also super high in the KenPom rankings. And so I just wanted to ask you, can't Duke just be shitty, Ken? Come on. Like, can't you give us a break here?
I mean, can they? They've almost never been shitty in their entire, you know, existence.
Well, yeah, but right? Still, like, I mean,
I think we have to accept the 4 seeds where they come. I mean, they're not 1s and 2 seeds anymore. They're a 4 seed. And, you know, the landscape has really shifted for teams like Duke. Teams like Duke and Kentucky both. Like, it's really hard to have, like, tremendous success, you know, loading up on freshmen. And Duke no longer loads up on freshmen, but they get the best freshmen, and they've supplemented them with, you know, a little bit of talent around it. But let's not get greedy here, okay? You know, you're never going to see the day where Duke's going to be, you know, a 10 seed or something like that. They're 4 seed. They're out of the limelight. They're probably not going far this year. You know, life's pretty good.
We're all still chasing the high of that. Was it like Lehigh that they lost to, where the whole team was like doing like the Dougie afterwards? Like, we're not, you don't get that every year. That's why you get to remember it. You see somebody.
I do oddly miss Coach K, not because of his personality, but I liked watching his face age in relation to his dye job staying exactly the same. And to that end, I'd like to talk about Rick Pitino, because his St. John's team got left out of the tournament despite being 25th in your rankings. You said they gave UConn a hard time in the Big East tournament, and I watched that game. It was close. Why did St. John's get the snub? Like, whose wife did Pitino sleep with this time? Like, what happened there?
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of times we think the selection committee has, you know, these kind of ancillary criteria that have nothing to do with basketball and, you know, that would lead to a team like St. John's getting in. They would clearly be great viewing. They are, you know, in the number one market in the country. Like they, you know, everything besides basketball should have had them in, and they clearly were good enough to be in. They did not have the, you know, bulk number of quality wins, unfortunately, to get there. And so ultimately that kept them out. I don't know if there's some like secret issue with Rick Pitino, some sort of soft probation here we're putting him on. But yeah, it was pretty stunning because certainly I think they, you know, in terms of their ability, had they gotten into the tournament, you know, they definitely could have won a couple of games.
I think I have to say that, you know, I joke about conspiracies, but I really don't think they're right. I think the committee sits in the room and they fill out the bracket pretty much as sloppily as I do after it's finished. They're like, like Iowa State number two. Yeah, they were pretty good, right? Like Auburn four. That sounds like Auburn. We'll put them at four. Who gives a shit? Like, they don't really care.
This is what's crazy about this stuff, too, is I think this is a part of it is, you know, growing up. But then also just this has been a rough decade, say, for the NCAA. Like, it's really hard to take them seriously in any facet at this point. And so when they make a mistake like that, it's, you know, there's a part of, you know, the part of you that was once a kid and saw this stuff in kind of a mystical light. Like, you want to hear like the Donald Sutherland monologue from JFK where he's like, well, you have to ask yourself who profits, you know, and it's like just 15 minutes of conspiracy theory. But I feel
it's
like
a great
we know
scene.
It is a great scene, but we know these guys at this point. Like, it's not, these guys are not puppet masters. Like, they are like, one of them gets a necktie stuck in a hot dog roller every 10 days. Like, that is just their nature. So I think at this point, like, there were, I mean, the weird snubs. St. John's was one, I watched them a decent amount this year. Like, they're identifiably like the sort of team that could win in a tournament. Also, you could see why Rick Pitino was so unhappy all year long, which he was incredibly, like, you don't even want to say unprofessional, but he was like burying his players by name. He said that this was the most unenjoyable professional experience he'd ever had, which the professional thing is an important caveat if you're a longtime Rick Pitino follower, but it is still like there's not like any, nobody's like trying to make it necessarily look bad. Like, if these guys are going by vibes in the same way that like Oscar voters are going by vibes, like, you would think that St. John's was a lot worse than they were.
Rick just screaming at a press conference, Felipe Lopez isn't walking through that door.
Sean L. Scott isn't walking through that door. And if
it is funny.
He'd have type 2 diabetes. Yeah.
It is funny, though, Ken, because like the way the NCAA's been going now, they've been getting their ass kicked so handily that like St. John's could sue them for not making the tournament and like, win.
Exactly.
Yeah, they might give that a shot. The giveaway, really, guys, is that, you know, hardly anything that happens during championship week seems to matter in the bracket. Like, this, you know, teams are winning games, losing games, and New Mexico is a great example. Like, they won the Mountain West tournament. Had they not won the championship game in the Mountain West, they would not have been in the tournament, despite the fact that by the time they got to the championship game in the Mountain West tournament, they had a resume that was easily good enough to be in. But the committee,
they're your highest ranked double digit seed. They're really good, right?
They're legitimate, you know, a legitimate double digit team with like good, not the legitimate double digit team, but legitimate top 25 team with great athleticism and, you know, NBA potential players on their team. Like, it's a team like that could do some damage. And, the committee just basically stops working on, I don't want to say stops working, but they stopped doing the selection pretty much on Thursday and started doing the seeding. And so St. John's is another team that did damage in their conference tournament and built their resume to a point where they probably deserved to be in by the time the Big East tournament was over. But, you know, the committee really just didn't care at that point.
Yeah. And in a year when, as you said, there was a lot of upheaval in the conference tournaments, that really sort of shows, like, I'm not going to pretend that I know what NC State is actually all about, but they romped through the ACC tournament. Like, they played great. They beat a lot of really good teams, and they are what, an 11th seed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they would have been nowhere close to an at-large team, but, obviously you win five games in 5 days and that's impressive on some level. They were the most unlikely tournament champion. And if you saw the end of their game in the ACC semifinals against Virginia, you might understand why. I mean, they banked in a three-pointer to force overtime in a situation where Virginia had like two fouls to give. So the shot probably should have never even happened. But that allowed them to ultimately advance to the finals, and they beat UNC for the berth.
Well, we have to take a break. I have We have so many more questions about the tournament to ask you, Ken. But before we cut to break, this week's show is brought to you by Stetson, the cologne. Remember Stetson cologne? Well, now you do. Stetson, it's not just a college, it's a smell. We'll be right back with Ken Pomeroy to talk about the NCAA tournament. Hey, it's Drew. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. So what's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need some more alone time. Well, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery and empowers you to be the best version of yourself. And you might need it even if you're someone who hasn't experienced major trauma. And if you want to try therapy, but you're not sure where to start, BetterHelp is a great tool to keep in mind. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Getting along well with your therapist and feeling you can really open up to them is such an important part of what makes therapy work. So being able to switch therapists for no additional charge is an important feature. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/distraction today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/distraction.
The Distraction is brought to you this week by Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Here are a few reasons why Factor is different. Those two-minute meals. You can fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals, and they're ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. You can discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. There's no prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, no cooking, or cleanup needed. They're flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. You can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime as needed. It's the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. So head to factormeals.com/distraction50 and use code distraction50 to get 50% off. That's code distraction50 at factormeals.com/distraction50 to get 50% off.
And we're back with Kent Pomeroy breaking down the NCAA tournament field, the men's field, I should say. I didn't want to. I should have specified that early on. But anyway, we were talking about 11 seeds like New Mexico getting into the tournament, also NC State getting in because they won the conference tournament, forcing the committee to be like, "Oh shit, that means we gotta fuck somebody over." So St. John's, I guess they're out. Whatever. Ken, do you see this? This could be a question that. You're going to get the standard sports talk radio question now. Who are your sleepers in here besides New Mexico? Who are you gravitating towards in these low seeds? Who should, what 12 seed should I pick to upset a 5?
Well, guys, if I was going to pick a big upset in the first round, I mentioned Alabama. I have zero confidence in them. Partly because they're a team that has no mid-range game. And if you know anything about Alabama, they're coached by Nate Oates. And if you watch any Alabama games in the tournament, they will remind you he's a math teacher. as if he's somehow more qualified to interpret a box score than anybody else.
I like that.
But he really avoids mid-range, which is theoretically a great thing, but they avoid it so much that when they get into the tournament and they have to, they're forced into things they're uncomfortable doing, they have no experience doing that, and that really makes their life difficult. So I do think I'm going to take a flyer and say Charleston really gives Alabama a game in the first round, and that would be kind of my upset special early on.
Were any Bama players associated in a shooting this off season?
No, a clean year off.
Oh, wow. Congratulations to them.
Alabama. Yeah.
So the math teacher thing, is that just basically that he noticed that 3 is a bigger number than 2? Because that's more of an arithmetic thing.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what he taught was basic arithmetic.
No, but that actually is a good question, because obviously the 3-point revolution in the NBA was based on the fact that you can get much more value out of shooting from downtown than you can launching nothing but mid-range jumpers, you know, especially if you have like Patrick Ewing on two gimpy knees spinning around and taking 19 years to shoot the ball.
Still is that so mad about Patrick Ewing's pivot play?
I know.
It's
I was
a real recurring Drew trope. Go on. Yeah. I love it.
Anyway, Ken, do you find that that philosophy holds water in college basketball as well, and that it is being adhered to? Because your evaluation of Alabama is based on the idea that college basketball would be really a different sport to the NBA compared to the NBA in terms of that strategy.
So it's not different from the NBA necessarily in terms of that strategy. Like, 3-pointers are still good. Spacing the court is still good. All those things are still good. And Alabama does that pretty well. I mean, they take a ton of threes and they make them at a high clip. So, you know, against weaker competition, they've really just shredded opponents because they're able to pick them apart that way. And they don't have to shoot mid range. But, you know, when you play more sophisticated defenses in the NCAA tournament, we mentioned how the SEC, you're not playing a lot of sophisticated defenses, but that's going to change really quick. And you're going to face much more intense scouting, and teams are going to be completely motivated. That's where it gets to be a problem. And you do need, you need an out really on those nights where the three isn't necessarily falling. And Alabama just does not have that out. So threes are still good, but you need, really a more well-rounded game to succeed at the highest level.
Well, that's just it, because of the one and done format. How many times have you seen a team that, you know, is high seeded, but they have a bad shooting night? If you have one bad shooting night, you're fucked. And so it seems to me like you're saying essentially Alabama is more prone to that than maybe some of their peers in the field.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And I think that ultimately that's been their downfall in past years. And I think that'll be their downfall this year.
Let's go down to the toilet of your rankings, because we have the lowest KenPom team to make the field. That's 293rd ranked Wagner. How shitty is Wagner? And do they have a prayer against 276th ranked Howard on Tuesday night?
I mean, that figures to be actually a very entertaining game. Ooh. If you're a fan of slow-paced basketball and a lot of missed shots. Yeah.
This is like the sicko caveat should be just appended. Assume that it's on everything that we're talking about. Like, if you're the sort of person that wants to watch Wagner Howard, you might be in for a treat.
Yeah, if you're talking like a poor man's Wisconsin-Virginia matchup. Is that like,
you nailed it.
Ooh, I don't like that. Ew.
Yeah, I mean, the 16 seed games in the first four are not typically recommended viewing. I guess we can go there. I won't be watching, and I unless you're a Wagner or a Howard alum, like Gus Johnson will be watching, Howard alum, but outside of him, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of interest.
Wagner is a school that I have some experience with because they play in the little local low D1 conference that I've been to a lot of games. I've not been to a game at Wagner's gym. Wagner's on Staten Island. I'm not going to take a boat to watch a college basketball game where one team scores in the 60s and one team scores in the 50s. However, I have watched Wagner at LIU Brooklyn's gym years ago, which is just a short train ride away from my home. And the idea that a team, the NEC, often has to play in the first four. It's just, they're small schools. A lot of them are sort of commutery schools in the Northeast. It is an admirable thing that they're in D1 at all, if any of this is to be admired. But they had a losing record in the regular season. They didn't get to 16 wins until the game that won them the NEC tournament. I want to believe that there's like, you know, a vibes thing that can get a sort of a bad team that gets hot at the end of the year over. I have no illusions about Wagner. I know Howard did a similar thing in their tournament, which I believe is the MEAC, right? That they
correct, yes.
And both are in the tournament for the first time, I believe, yeah. Too. Which is
Grambling is in it for the first time.
Yeah, oh, Howard was yes. in it last year, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that. I knew. Why would you think I didn't know that? I completely
knew. I guess the question, this is the thing that is not... And I'm not trying to do the like stats versus eye test bit with your thing, because I appreciate your thing very much.
Feel free to do the bit. I'm all for it.
So Is there a, I can't get it from looking at the numbers, and my catch as catch can conference tournament viewing hasn't necessarily shown it to me. Is there a vibes team to you? Like a team that beyond, I mean, Connecticut has just been amazing for 2 months, but is there a team here that you feel like has got that extra weird special something, either that is making them recommended viewing or a team that could potentially go far? Usually at this time of year, I feel like I've got a few, and I don't know that I've got any right now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there isn't, there isn't that team that's like maybe catching fire the last 3 or 4 weeks that was kind of asleep for most of the season, maybe like UConn was last year.
I guess Wisconsin was good, then bad, then seems good again.
Wisconsin was really good early in the season, sleptwalk through most of the Big Ten season, and then pulled out of it late in the year and in the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, to whatever extent we have vibes for a team like Wisconsin, like they might fit that mold. Yeah.
Not the word that gets used to describe Wisconsin basketball hardly ever.
Yeah, it's just hard to come up with vibes, you know?
What about Iowa State? I feel like a lot of people love Iowa State this year. And I say that because I saw one tweet, someone said like, oh, look out for Iowa State. And I was like, oh, okay, I got to look out for Iowa State.
Right. So Iowa State, you know, famously winning the Big 12 tournament, beating Houston by 30 or something in the title game.
Seems
has
good.
Played. It all seems good. The problem with Iowa State is they're so dependent on their defense. So we've talked about these teams that are, you know, all in on offense and not playing defense. Iowa State's a little bit of the opposite. They are the number one ranked defense. They're the 55th ranked offense. And that's typically not a combination that bodes well in the NCAA tournament either. But their defense is super fun to watch. Like, I think some defenses you watch historically, I think Virginia defenses are extremely effective, but maybe not that fun to watch. Like, I'm not a huge fan of watching defense, but Iowa State's defense is legitimately fun to watch. Like, their guards are going to be in their opponent's faces, you know, as soon as they get across half court. They force a ton of turnovers. They are very good at keeping guys in front of them. So from that standpoint, they will be a very difficult team to play. Unfortunately, they just are very challenged putting the ball in the basket. I think my favorite player on their team is a guy by the name of Milan Momcilovic.
Ooh.
Yeah. Fun name to say. And you would think like he's from...
He must be from Iowa, right?
With that name? Well, it's funny you say that because he's actually from Wisconsin.
Get the fuck out of here.
No. You have what's great about him is like you watch his game and you know he has a very kind of European game. He takes like fadeaways from the elbow. It's they're very hard to guard, but it's really you know, a great synopsis of Iowa State's offense. That's you know, his scoring maybe isn't a staple of what they do, but it is a part of what they do, and you can only go so far shooting, you know, fadeaways from the elbow.
Ken, which of the first four teams is going to piss me off by making an extended tourney run? I know it's not going to be Wagner, so.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Howard? No, I'm going
to. You like the Colorados, right? Colorado and Colorado State.
Well, I like the Colorado. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they opened with Boise State. You know, it's one of those deals where, yeah, once it's a challenge for the team playing them, right? Because the team playing them cannot really fully commit to their opponent until. You know, that game's played. And so it's a scouting challenge for the opponent, right? So Colorado's a solid team with some upside, have one of the best NBA prospects at the college level in Cody Williams, who's the brother of one of the Jalen Williamses on
the more prominent of the two Jalen Williams.
The one that is, blowing up right now, as the kids say. So that's a team to watch. You know, they'll play Florida and an injury depleted Florida in their first game, and then possibly play an injury depleted Marquette in the second game, and then possibly play a defensive minded or non defensive minded Kentucky team in the third game. So the schedule is a little bit potentially friendly for them. So that was if one team's going to make a run out of there, I'd say it's Colorado.
Did you ever do a study? Because I'm fascinated by the point you made about how it's a scouting problem for the team that they're going to play in the first round, whoever wins in the first four. Have you ever done a study that says first four teams have a historical advantage getting, you know, advancing in the tournament because of this? Is there any way to quantify that?
I'm sure there are ways to quantify that, and I have not done so, Drew. I'm sorry.
What the fuck, man? Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it certainly seems historically there are just so many cases of these teams overachieving once they win that first game that, you know, there's there should be something to it, but no, I've not done a study. I apologize.
It's okay.
Again, though, if we're all going by vibes here, which I think we mostly are, then that definitely scans to me that, like, if I were to be scared of any 10 seed for whatever reason, it would have to be the one that won a previous game to become a 10 seed. That just, I don't know, rings true. The other thing, I think we you were starting to talk about St. Mary's, and I wanted to talk about them a little bit because that is a team that of the, I mean, it's not hardly like a sleeper program anymore. They sent a bunch of guys to the NBA. They have been in the tournament basically every year, it feels like. I've watched them kind of a lot this year, and it is one of those confusing things that happens when you, and I don't know, Ken, do you like watch a lot of basketball too? I know that you do a lot of this stuff, but are you, you're also on like the sicko hours watching like Western Athletic Conference games? That's really, and stuff.
That's my specialty, Roth, is the late night games. I'm out here in the Mountain Time Zone, so I'm watching a lot of WCC, Pac-12 when it's on a real network. Hawaii basketball. It's a shame Hawaii didn't make the tournament because I could go into their depth chart if we wanted. But yeah, those are my specialties.
Yeah, so the teams that I've watched, I have friends that are into Arizona. Arizona, as you said, is pretty fun to watch. I've made a point of watching them. And then St. Mary's, I've seen play against the cream of their conference, and Gonzaga also did make the field. I have no idea how good St. Mary's is against a team that plays in like a really big gym. I haven't seen that. Is there, like, how do you line all that up? Because, like, I think St. Mary's, even by St. Mary's standards, it's like there's fewer Aussies than usual. They got Sarunas Marcellonis' son. There's like stuff there that I like, but I don't know what it means.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it all means either. I mean, the basic DNA of the team is very similar to what it's always been. I mean, we talk about, you know, great defenses, and they objectively have a really good defense. They're one of those defenses that is actually excruciating to watch. You know, it's just a slow you down, you know, keep the score in the 50s type of defense. You're going to see a lot of missed shots, and they're just going to grab the rebounds on all those missed shots. I mean, the fascinating thing about them is they started 3-5 this year, and those three wins, one of those was against a non-division one team. So they really started 2-5, and they finished 26-7. So they did finish strong, beating Gonzaga, you know, not typical Gonzaga team, twice. And, it will be interesting to see what translates here. I mean, they've had mixed results in the NCAA tournament. So we'll see what happens, but they are in that, Alabama pod. So, if they do beat Grand Canyon in the first game, they would potentially play Alabama or Charleston. So it is a little bit of a softer draw for them, which I think is helpful. And, as you mentioned, you know, they have the son of an NBA legend. So, yep. We're going by vibes. That's got to be worse than vibes, I think.
But related to that, Grand Canyon has that sort of name where it's given me that sort of Florida Gulf Coast sort of feeling. Yeah, where it's like where people are like, oh, wow, can you imagine? Can you believe Grand Canyon made it this far? They're not even a school. They're just a bunch of guys hanging out in the middle of the canyon in a tent, and they're not even a real school. And like Deion Sanders founded it and like all that. So that seems like the sort of team that would go far despite having absolutely nothing going for them. By the way, I want to go back to the SEC because I have one more question before the big question, Ken. So you have South Carolina. They got a 6th seed despite ranking 49th in your rankings. That means Oregon's going to fuck them up real good in round one, right?
That's the idea. I mean, this is Oregon's done this bit before where they are nowhere near an at-large bid, and then they win their conference tournament, and then they get to the tournament and, they get to the Sweet 16. Things are set up pretty well for them. I mean, South Carolina is one of those teams who really had the largest difference between their actual accomplishments and their kind of per possession play. They beat a lot of quality teams. But when they won, they won very narrowly. And when they lost badly. So that's an issue for South Carolina. So do you believe the wins and losses, or do you believe the per possession stuff? And normally the answer is the per possession stuff. So certainly I do have some hopes here for Oregon to pull off what, would not be a major upset necessarily, but given where Oregon has been this year, essentially with no hope of making the tournament, it would be an interesting turnaround for them.
Oregon's got one of my pervert hours favorites as well. I'm a big Enfali Dante guy. Couldn't tell you why, really. I guess just something I saw late at night a couple times this year, but
He's a great story. He's another one of those guys who like came into college, you know, really highly rated recruit, and here he is as a senior, you know, still playing for the same team and now actually like super productive.
Yeah. It's time for the money question. I diligently filled out my bracket in 3 minutes this morning, and I have my final four ready. But first, we have to ask you, Ken, because you know far more about the sport than we do. Who you got? Who's your final four? Who you got winning the tournament?
All right. Well, can you guys see this? Here's my bracket. It's completely blank. Beautiful. I know the listeners can't see that, but I will fill out my bracket in about 3 seconds here, guys.
Do it.
Yeah. So we're going to take, we will take Auburn as the upset special out of the East region.
Wow.
UConn will not make it. We'll take Arizona out of the West.
Ooh, Arizona.
And we will take Purdue. We'll go with Purdue out of the Midwest.
Wow. You're good. You're doing it.
I'm doing it.
You're hurting yourself.
You can sense the
pain.
You're
asking for a spanking, but okay.
And then I got Houston coming out of the South. And I think we've done this bit before. I really like to align my personal belief system with my picks. And I love Houston. I can't stay away from them. They just get so much out of their talent and ability. And, I think Kelvin Sampson's a guy I can root for. Started his college coaching career at a place called Montana Tech. Really had nothing handed to him early on, and it'd be great to see them win a title. And so I do have them. I do have them winning it all.
Wow, so, Roth, do you have a Final Four?
I do. It's going to change, but I also have Houston in mind. I think Houston is a team that, again, mostly a vibes-based pick. They've been great all year, but they're also like, they're sufficiently annoying to play against that I have to believe that counts for something. Teams just seem to be really mad playing against them all the time.
That's so the Sampson effect, I assume.
It is. I think it is. So
he's a very good coach.
I have UConn and Arizona, and then I have Houston and Creighton. I don't know why Creighton necessarily. Again, a team I've watched a lot. They seem to have a lot of pretty good players. I have no expectation that they'll actually make the Final Four. I don't know that that'll actually be a Final Four team in my bracket. It was just, I was going off my feelings and I had to trust my feelings.
Would you go for it?
Would you believe I put them in too? Right after there was just an onion thing. There was a great onion thing where it was like, occasionally the NCAA tournament allows college student to care about Creighton for 16 days, which I,
yeah.
All right. So I have UConn. My Final Four is UConn, Colorado. Thanks to you, Ken, I have you to blame for that. Creighton, because I just didn't like anybody else in the bracket. And then I had New Mexico. You're to blame, Ken. And then I have UConn defeating Creighton in the final. So I have UConn winning back-to-back, because what always happens is a lot of crazy shit goes down all the way to the final game, and then someone predictable wins. That's usually how it works, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm changing my pick to Creighton, okay? Purdue's out.
Wow.
Creighton.
Wow.
I want to be united.
Kalkbrenner gang, we're out here.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's good.
Well, that's good. Glad that we could help you be wrong in a less informed way. That's a gift. You know, you've given us a gift with your presence, and we've given you a gift with our contagious idiocy.
I have to do right by our former colleagues at The Onion and read the actual headline. Area teen watching March Madness enters 2-week phase where dream school is Creighton. That's the
yes.
That's the headline. It's they worded it better than I did when I paraphrased it. We have a little bit of extra time with you, Ken Pomeroy, which, lucky for you, that means it's time to open the fun bag. These are real questions.
Oh, you almost got out of here.
Yeah, you almost got out, but too bad for you. These are real questions from defector readers and distraction listeners. This one's from Scott Ken Pomeroy. He asked, my second grader last night asked what our top three fruits were. I went strawberries, cherries, and I guess apples, but only the first two qualify. But the first two only qualify if they're farm fresh. The grocery store versions are awful. Store-bought strawberries are hard, dry, flavorless bullshit bred for travel stability and large size. But apples are just as good store-bought as they are picked off a tree. Depending on the variety, some are actually better. So what fruit, Ken Pomeroy, do you think has the biggest variance between peak taste and most widely available? This is a low floor, high ceiling question, really.
Yeah, I'm not sure I completely grasp it, but I'm going to go with a off the board pick here and go with the kiwi.
Oh, so you like a bad kiwi is.
I don't know if I had a bad kiwi. Like, you have to leave a kiwi laying around for like a month for it to be bad. So
yeah.
It's like the safest pick when you're at the grocery store is get a kiwi. And, you know, if you eat it tonight or you eat it a month from now, it's probably going to be pretty tasty.
Yeah, that's true. You can definitely get them when they're like billiard balls and then just wait. But they often, when you get them from the store, they often are like hard as marble for whatever reason.
But even at that point, they're somewhat tasty, like surprisingly.
Yeah, I like nourishing. It. I like, if you like a tart fruit experience, they're great. Yeah.
They are good. And they're like, they're a good school lunch food for kids because they're I don't have to do anything. Like a lot of them now come with a little like plastic half spoon, half knife combination that's disposable. So I can just toss a whole kiwi into the kid's lunchbox with that spoon knife and I'm good to go. I don't have to do shit, which any way I can avoid food prep, like the chopping of fruits and vegetables, I'm very down with it. By the way, I have to say that Scott cited apples here is sort of like, very dependable. I don't agree with that. Like, even when you buy like a variety you like, where you're like, I've had Honeycrisp where I'm like, oh, Honeycrisp, those are always good. And then I eat it and I'm like, this tastes like shit. Like, this, it's not, it still has some, you're still taking some chances there. Also, yeah. Mango's very good, even when you buy it from a shit ass grocery store, unless it's gone rotten by the time it's gone soft.
You sort of have to wait for those. I think you can get stuff, what is coming through here is that like mangoes, imported kiwis, pretty much always imported, that these are like, you can get them unripe and then it's on you to make sure you eat them at the right time. I feel like that's the way that it is with stone fruit during stone fruit season too, that I'd rather get a peach early and then just like wait for it to randomly start smelling really good in the room where the peaches are sitting on a plate and then eat them at that moment than have to try to get it at the exact right moment from, you know, a marketplace. Like, and you get them underripe at green markets too, I think. But if the question is about the greatest lag between like good and bad, then it's berries for me. I think that like getting those actually like fresh or at a green market relative to from a factory farm in Chile in a supermarket is night and day. It's not the same sort of thing.
No, I think you're right.
But I, you know, whatever. I will pretty much. We had this question last week about dried fruit. A bunch of people got mad about the idea that any dried fruit could be better than any fresh fruit.
Oh, did they?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, like, not mad. They got mad in the way that like commenters get mad, where they're sort of, like
raisin haters. Like,
yes, there were raisin haters. They were like, who would eat this? And to me, the answer is mostly children. But it's still like they're fine. You know, like for kids or in cookies, certain types of cookies.
But that was the question. The fruit that has the biggest variance between peak taste and most widely available. And because we're getting into summer, I do have to say peaches, because when you have a good peach, it's so, so good. But it's like the most of the peaches I buy do not reach that pinnacle. I'm chasing a dragon here with peaches a lot of the time.
You're getting in while they're still crunchy. All right. It would be bad to make Ken late for something because we're being like, do you like apricots as well? So we should.
Does that mean we should end the podcast? I guess we should end but can you do one more question, Ken, or should we go?
Sure. Let's go. Yep.
All right.
All right, let's do it. This is from Vince. This is the last question. Watching shows like Dateline and 48 Hours, whenever a young woman dies in some horrendous murder, she's always described as happy-go-lucky by friends and family. Every single time. But what does that mean? Are happy-go-lucky people more at risk than other people? Or is it just something people say about people who died tragically? I truly don't know what happy-go-lucky means. Are you happy-go-lucky? Do you find any... Ken Pomeroy, do you find any meaning in the phrase happy-go-lucky?
I do find some meaning in that. Yeah. I think it's someone who's, you know, just a little bit naive to the dangers of the world. And that's why they end up the subject of a Dateline NBC special.
That is a shockingly good and accurate answer. Oh, my God.
The number one way to get talked about on Dateline is to have that personality type.
The way I was thinking about it was you described as happy-go-lucky. If like, basically, if you are not an asshole, like if you are not just a grotesquely violent person and you smile and you say hi to like neighbors when you walk by them and stuff, and like, wow, that person's really carefree. Like they, and like nobody is, like everybody's fucked, right? But like, if you're capable of putting on a good face and you don't just like randomly stab people when you're irritated by them, then you get the happy-go-lucky tag, I think.
Yeah. This is like the other side of when you hear like serial killers' neighbors describe them as like, he was a quiet guy.
Yeah.
Like in the
yeah,
sense that he wasn't like on the porch every night being like, oh, I'm going to kill again. It's going to be amazing. You know, like that there's another way to be. It's just that nobody is ever actually quite that obvious about how they are. I would love to, I think being happy-go-lucky sounds great. In the sense that being happy and being lucky are both great. Go, obviously, is nice. I don't know exactly what it's doing in the middle of that phrase.
You're going. But you know, you got to go.
Going, just going. Just got to go. But I think that there's... being able to pass as happy-go-lucky is my aspiration, I think. Like, the idea of if someone met me and they were like, hey, he seems like, you know, a happy-go-lucky guy. Kind of a quiet guy. Like, yeah. I think that would have felt like I'd have accomplished something at that point.
Yeah, I got bad news for you on that end, Ross.
Yeah, I know. I'm on both. On both of them, I know.
Yeah, having a look at me is like you're 5 years old and you're skipping to the bus stop.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen if you're like 40.
Like Elmo is happy-go-lucky. That's basically what we're describing.
Elmo is so happy-go-lucky. Like you tickle him and he laughs. He's not like, get the fuck away from me. You're tickling. What are you doing? Like,
it's terrible what happened to him.
By the way, I went up to my daughter, or was it my son? I can't remember. One of the kids. Anyway, I went up to as a parent, I went behind them to tickle them. Like, do the sides, like, you know, you grab them by the sides and be like, ah. And I think it was my daughter. And she was like, ah. She's like she thought she was being accosted. And I was like, okay, well, I can't tickle my kids anymore because I'm going to go to jail.
She's not happy-go-lucky.
No.
Not happy-go-lucky.
That's going to serve her well, though.
Exactly.
But you know what? I hope all of you have a happy-go-lucky NCAA tournament. Ken Pomeroy, you were not only wonderfully informative, happy and lucky and carefree and footloose, but you were also greatly informative in ways that really, I'm going to tear up this bracket now because it's already doomed and I'm going to redo it so that it's doomed, but in a more sort of respectable manner. Eric Silver is our producer. Brandon Grugel is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Ads and production services are by Multitude. Subscribe to Defector.com. Right now, just go to Defector and hit that subscribe button. You can also email us at distraction@defector.com or you can call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. That's 909-PANERA-0. And you can find Ken Palm's rankings at KenPalm.com. Anything else you'd like to plug while you're here, Ken?
I have a Substack as well, so check that out at KenPalm.substack.com.
Yes.
Brilliant. A very good writer as well. He's written
for Defector. Is. Thank you so much, Ken, and have a great, great tournament and a lovely spring.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thanks, as always, man.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.